was my first reaction when it was going on too. Like, dude, you're willing to give up your career. The more you think about it this way. You've already made some money. You've been in the league for a while. Oh, so Ricky Williams would rather smoke weed than play football. That on its face sounds ridiculous.
Did you feel stigmatized as a result of all that?
Of course. I mean, of course. There is a big story. You know, NFL player gives up millions at the height of his career to smoke weed. So, you know, that was something that a badge that I wore for most of my career. I don't think I would have been content with my life if my life was only defined by what I did on the football field and the doors and possibilities and opportunities that appeared for me when I decided to walk away in 2004 have been priceless. And so now I've learned to embrace the idea when one door closes, another door opens.
That was former NFL running back Ricky Williams, whose professional career stopped and started over the years due to his repeated violations of the league's drug policy. But now, as the country loosens its restrictions on marijuana use, the major sports leagues have followed suit, and harsh punishments are becoming a thing of the past. Today, we talk to Williams about these changes and whether his career would have unfolded differently in the modern NFL. Then we take a broader look at how cannabis policy has changed across all of the major leagues, and what's next for weed in sports. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Thursday, April 30th. This is ESPN Daily. How you doing, Ricky?
I'm doing pretty good.
Ricky Williams played in the NFL from 1999 to 2005, retiring briefly in 2004, then again from 2007 through 2011. He tested positive for marijuana three times throughout his career and served a year-long suspension in 2006 for a non-marijuana substance violation. So let's start here. As of today, Ricky, 50 teams in the NFL, MLB, NHL, and the NBA play in states or provinces where recreational marijuana is legal, including the one where both you and I are, California. Attitudes towards weed have changed a lot since you were playing football. When you came into the NFL, how did the league and teams perceive it?
It was definitely taboo. First drug test you fail, they put you on a drug program where you then get tested. I got tested 9 times a month. And then if you fail again, you lose a quarter of your salary. And then a third failed test is a 4-game suspension. And so it was a big deal. When I got into the league, there were probably 5 or 6 guys on my team that were already in the drug program.
You mentioned you were tested a lot during your NFL career. At the time, did you think it was a big deal?
You know, I think the worst part, and I had probably one of the most intimate relationships with the drug program because I was in the drug program for almost 10 years. The thing that I'm most proud of to see changed is, like, the whole drug program became a thing where their main objective was to catch people. Mm. And I don't think that's honoring the nature of what the drug program was supposed to be about. It was supposed to be about identifying people that truly had substance abuse problems and getting help for them. And hopefully that's, you know, with the changes that has been made in the new CBA, that it's more honoring to that aim. But I had a long conversation with Demore Smith a couple years ago about the way that they were going to approach cannabis regulation in the NFL and the next CBA. And he made it clear that it wasn't a drug issue for him. And for the players, it was more of a health issue. And it seems like he was successful in getting that point across.
And Demore Smith, for those who don't know, is the head of the Players Association. Does it seem like now, you know, they've arrived at a place where you feel like they actually are, you know, looking to help if necessary and not just to catch guys? What do you make of the current policy?
Well, I think that the fact that, you know, from the headlines that I was exposed to, the idea was that no players need to be suspended for this. And if players do have an issue, let's get them help, but moving away from punitive measures.
When you spoke with D. Smith ahead of the new CBA, what did you tell him?
I just shared my experience. I mean, the main thing was I thought it was a travesty that someone who was a good a major contributor to their team and a huge contributor to the community, had his, speaking of me, had my career derailed because of failing these tests. And my comment about the punitive nature of the program, I think already being African-American in this country, there's already a sensitivity to feeling like a criminal. And the way that the NFL treats people in the program, it felt like you were a criminal. You know, where if I was traveling somewhere, I had to call and report to the NFL my address and how long I'd be there. And if they called me to test me, I had 4 hours to get to that spot. And it just was a lot of unneeded stress for a situation where I don't think that I had a problem or an issue. I mean, I grew up in a community where I had, you know, aunts, uncles, stepfather who all used cannabis, and it was just part of our normal life. But, you know, I think in some other communities, especially the time that I grew up in the 80s with DARE and a big push to keep people and kids off of drugs, it's a huge spectrum.
One of my earliest memories from elementary school is winning like a medal for doing a drawing for DARE. And I had no idea like what I was even drawing or what the purpose of it was, but it was so omnipresent in our lives when we were kids.
Oh, it was huge. And, you know, the commercials, I remember the guy cracks the egg and says, "This is your brain.
This is your brain.
Yes, yes.
This is drugs.
And this is your brain on drugs.
This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?"
And I'm a curious person, and so I've tried a lot of different ways to take care of myself, and I found that cannabis works best, aside from, you know, it being prohibited by the NFL.
Do you think it provides other benefits to professional athletes?
For sure. I mean, I know my own personal experience, and I know the experiences that I saw with my teammates. And playing in professional sport is tough on your body, and it's really tough on your mind. And guys have different ways of relieving the stress and getting their mind right to do what they have to do. And in my opinion, the guys who chose, you know, Percocet and Vicodin are doing more damage to themselves. The guys who chose alcohol are doing more damage to themselves. And, you know, I found the guys that I saw with myself that cannabis was a healthier alternative.
I think that's been sort of one of the biggest factors in the change in policies in sports is what you just described, how athletes manage pain. I mean, what kind of pain management tools did you see when you were playing?
I mean, the only one that I saw really were treatment. You go early to practice and you get electric stim, maybe a little massage, and pills. I mean, anytime I had anything going on with my body, I'd go to the team doctor, and he said exactly the same thing every time. Here's a prescription, and, you know, I'll let coach know that you're hurting a little bit. That was it. Truth is, when I really started smoking, it was only maybe 6 months before I was put in the program. And being tested 9 times a month, you know, extremely limited the amount that I smoked. And so, yes, it was public and I failed the test and all of that, but compared to most of the guys on the team, I wasn't really a big smoker. And so, you know, again, a short amount of time, I got put in the program, felt like a criminal. And then when I was in the program, again, I was tested so much that I would smoke maybe, you know, half of a joint once a month. And so it really wasn't a big part of my NFL career.
When did you get a sense that the league's approach towards all of this was beginning to change?
When they changed a few years ago, they changed the cutoff limit for nanograms of THC metabolites in the urine. When I played, it was 0.15 nanograms, which is extremely, extremely low threshold. And they bumped it up to 0.35 nanograms per milliliter. And if that had been the testing cutoff when I played, I never would have been in the drug program. I never would have failed the drug test. And so I knew when they were open to when they were changing their attitude from let's catch people to let's raise this this cutoff. I knew that there was that change was coming.
How does it make you feel knowing that the next Ricky Williams isn't going to, you know, be suspended and tested and penalized in the way that you were?
Well, I think to me it's bigger than that, and I think there's a bigger collective issue of the relationship between labor and capital. And I think the NFL is doing a good job. We're showing that the players and the owners can work together so that both sides get what they want. And I think that's the bigger issue is less exploitation, more open-mindedness and hearing what's going to benefit both sides. And I think it's reflected in the speed at which this new collective bargaining agreement was ratified.
Do you think, looking across these leagues and sort of where policies are now, there's a next step that they could go even further, or do you think it's in a good place?
I think it's in a good place. Next step that would take it even further would be for the NFL to invest resources on researching how cannabis can help its players. Hopefully NFL realizes that because of these rule changes, more players will be consuming cannabis, and I think it would be prudent on the part of the NFL to lead the research, both for the benefits and for, you know, possible detrimental effects. I think in, you know, situations like this where opinions are so polarized, people take such a hard stance to say no or yes that they miss the subtleties in the gray area in between. And my target isn't yes or no, it's how can we use cannabis in a way that actually contributes to our well-being.
Thanks so much, Ricky.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
After the break, we'll chat with ESPN reporter Emily Kaplan about her piece on updated policies around pro sports. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Emily, you wrote about how marijuana policies have been relaxed across all of the major sports. When do you think that trend really began?
Mina, I actually think there's been significant progress in the last 12 months. Last year, last March, I wrote about the NHL's marijuana policy, which, you know, if you follow the NHL, this might surprise you. It was the most progressive of all sports. It was a treatment-based approach. They test for weed, but if you test positive, you don't get fined and you don't have to sit out, which, as we know, is a big problem in sports like football. But in the last 12 months, majority of the sports now have an approach that's very similar to the NHL. The NFL did a new collective bargaining agreement this year in 2020, and they totally revamped their marijuana policy. And in baseball, after Tyler Skaggs' death, the MLB and MLBPA also redid their drug policy in whole, but in it, they tweaked the marijuana policy. And really right now, which again is pretty surprising, the NBA has the harshest penalties for marijuana.
So there are nuances in the differences between cannabis, THC, CBD. Can you explain for us how those might show up on the different policies for different sports?
Yeah. So CBD is something that if you've ever gone to a gas station in the middle of Maryland, you might have seen it on the shelves. It's very, very common. But it doesn't have the psychoactive properties of THC. So the NFL policy prohibits the use of THC, which is found in marijuana, and they also test for some CBD products. And that was really of problems for players, including Rob Gronkowski.
I'm here today to appeal to the sports governing bodies of the world to update their position on CBD, whether that's the NBA, MLB, or NFL. It's just time.
Who has a cannabis company that's CBD. And he pretty much said while he was briefly retired, I don't want to be banned from playing the sport I love because I'm using a product that anybody could buy right off the shelf at their local pharmacy.
I only wish I knew about CBD Medic while I was playing. It would have made a huge difference for me, I believe, during my playing career.
We just talked to Ricky Williams about, you know, how strict policies were in the past. When he was playing, or actually even more recently than that, what were the harsh punishments athletes could receive for testing positive for cannabis use?
Yeah, suspensions that were, like Ricky suffered, more than a year long. Major League Baseball actually had some of the craziest and harshest penalties. And what was wild is it never really affected Major League Baseball players, but it actually affected their minor league players. And a first test, if you test positive, you could be subject to a 50-game ban. And a second test is a 100-game ban. And a third is a lifetime ban. Just think about how crazy that is and how many careers were derailed. Guys in the minor league who just smoked pot once and tested positive, and this is what they faced.
What about the NFL?
In the NFL, if you test positive once, nothing happens to you. You're just put in the program. But after that, you start to face steeper fines and steeper penalties, including a lot of your game check and up to 1 year suspension. And we saw so many cautionary tales. Ricky Williams is one of them. Another is Randy Gregory, who went 616 days between regular season games because of suspensions.
So this has changed a great deal in the NFL, right, under the new CBA?
Yeah, the new NFL policy really closely mirrors the NHL policy, where it's more about treatment and it's not about punishment that can be punitive or, in some terms, draconian. If you pass test positive in the NFL, you'll never get suspended just because of marijuana. You might enter the program and you might have to get tested more and more and you'd be under doctor's supervision. But they're just saying, we're worried about your health and we want to make sure you get on the right track. We will take some money out of your pocket, but this won't keep you off of the field.
You mentioned that the NBA now has the strictest policy. What are their rules?
So in the NBA, a first positive test means that a player enters the program. A second test calls for a $25,000 fine. And by the third infraction, you're getting a 5-game suspension. And then each time after that, you keep adding 5 more games. The NBA, though, doesn't test players in the offseason. And the union and the league both agreed that they weren't going to test players during this coronavirus pause.
Do you think the NBA might loosen up as well in the coming years?
You know, I think everybody's expecting it, Mina, just because the NBA has a reputation as a more progressive league. Commissioner Adam Silver has been asked about this a bunch of times, and he's in constant communication with their players association. He's had a pretty hardline stance, though. He says, we're going to follow the science. And, you know, he had this great interview with Yahoo Sports ahead of the NBA finals last year. And he pretty much said, I understand sometimes it feels uncool. That's the word he used, that the league still tests for marijuana. But I think that's not exactly where the state of science on marijuana is.
Huh. Why do you think these leagues, excepting the NBA, have changed their stripes so much when it comes to marijuana policy?
I think that it's all reflective of society's views towards marijuana. You know, as you referenced in the beginning of the show, we're now in a situation where nearly 80% of professional sports franchises in North America are in cities or provinces where a player can go to practice, go home, then walk down the street in whatever city that he lives or she lives and legally purchase marijuana. And so it is wild to me and wild to a lot of these sports franchises that if that's something that you can legally do, how are you being punished for it?
What about the players? How do they feel about these rules and the fact that they're being loosened?
Mina, I know this might come as a surprise, but players uniformly do not want to get suspended for marijuana use.
Shocker.
They want to do whatever they do in their free time and not have their owners and the franchises that they play for punish them. But the guys that I talked to for this story, and as I was doing research, most guys use it for relaxation. The player X that I talked about in the NHL, he was talking about, you know, after a long game where he, you know, there's a bunch of lights and stimulation and physical activity, he just takes a couple hits of his vape pen just to relax and go to sleep at night. And it just goes beyond mental health benefits as well. There's a lot of pain management benefits that players say. And, you know, I used to cover the NFL and I know how prevalent pain killers are and Toradol and things like that. And a lot of players just say marijuana is a safer and more natural alternative to that. So that's why they prefer it.
All right, Emily, thanks for getting in the weeds with me.
Oh my God, that's good. That's a good name.
It was the highlight of my day. Coming up, is Secretariat the greatest to ever hoof it? We'll find out Saturday, sort of. Hi guys, given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Here's another story I want you to know. This Saturday marks the occasion of yet another sporting event that would normally be happening but isn't. The 146th Kentucky Derby. The race has been postponed until September, but in its place, NBC is planning to air something called the Triple Crown Showdown, a virtual race consisting of 13 horses who have previously won the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes. On Saturday evening, computer-generated versions of Secretariat, Affirmed, Justify, American Pharaoh, and other horses will compete in one race where the outcome is decided by a computer model based on their past performance. What that means is, even though some results are more likely than others, we won't know what will happen. It's almost like the NBA lottery. The horses with a higher probability of winning the race won't necessarily win, but they'll have a better chance to come out on top. Unsurprisingly, Secretariat is the favorite. Now, lest you think this is a novelty, or perhaps inspired by the latest season of Westworld, we should note this isn't the first time computers have made their way into sports competition. According to a recent piece in the Louisville Courier-Journal, computerized simulations of fictional sporting events can be traced back as far as 1967, when Muhammad Ali lost a simulated fight to lesser-known heavyweight Jim Jeffries, then filed a lawsuit for defamation of character. He ultimately settled for $10,000. More recently, in 1997, Deep Blue, the IBM computer, defeated chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov. And in 2011, another IBM computer, Watson, defeated Ken Jennings and Brad Rutter to become Jeopardy champion. So unlike past events, what's new here is that with most live sports on hold, this race is the only game in town. And I say, why stop there? Let's pit AI Jordan against AI LeBron. I'm sure the internet won't have any problem with whoever wins. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.